You're tuned in to East Tennessee's premier sports radio call-in show. This is The Drive.
And hello, good afternoon, and welcome to another stellar edition of The Drive here on Fan Run Radio. Russell Smith punching the time clock on a Tuesday afternoon edition of the show. We're going to get into some college football stuff today with your preseason power rankings starting to trickle out there. Continuing to monitor the basketball transfer portal market, we're on Chaz Watch here at Fan Run Radio. Chaz Lanier, come on down. And we're going to get granular on some Tennessee baseball with Rion Schumper of Rocky Top Insider coming up here in about 15 minutes. Greetings, gentlemen. How are we this afternoon?
Fantastic.
That did not sound – I did not hear a lot of conviction in that, Chris. It's a beautiful day out, man. Let's do the thing.
We've been grinding for an hour.
Just grinding.
Grinding. Tiger team official business.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah. You kind of came in like a hurricane there.
I did?
Eh. What about hurricane?
Trying to solve problems, man. Trying to solve problems. It's what we do here, Fan Run Radio.
Tiger team.
Create problems sometimes, too. But then you just got to solve them, man. As Pat Summitt said, left foot, right foot, breathe. We move forward together as one in unison. 865-288-3131. Your number to get on the show this afternoon as we break things down to levels beyond scientific. Are you guys surprised at the reaction to and the conspiracy theories coming from the Tom Brady roast?
I've been really busy and haven't paid that
for something that I didn't even know was coming out. Like I maybe it was promoted. I just missed it. But starting from when it was happening, I noticed a lot of social media reaction. I have not watched it on Netflix. I've just seen the clips that many people have seen going viral out there. And, we talked a little bit yesterday about, was Tom really upset with Jeff Ross when he was making his Robert Kraft massage joke? Some people think, Houston, you said you thought that was a work.
Yeah, a little bit of a work.
Yeah, he was in on it. Like, as other people think, no, that was Tom being serious. He was coming to the aid of a guy that he considers a father figure and that he did not think was going to be on limits, shall we say. Then here last night, I see where apparently Giselle is mad. She thinks that things went too far. And
yeah, I think they did.
For her?
You think they did?
Hell yes.
You think it's a roast? They went too far?
About specifically, I think it was Nikki Glaser. It was beyond.
She was the one that I didn't hear. I missed it.
She was the one that was she dropped bombs. I have seen most of her part of it. I mean, she savages Gronkowski. I'm pretty sure she drops Hernandez joke. She said, "There's no way I can say it on terrestrial radio."
Well, the other person who was evidently upset about it was Aaron Hernandez's ex.
Yeah. Yeah, the Hernandez stuff, some of it was funny, but also not good.
Here was my biggest problem with that is, like, I felt like it was surreal because I'm sitting there, you're looking at Belichick, you're looking at all these guys that played with that dude, and it's not hard to find videos where guys are interviewing, they'll talk about how he was in the locker room, and they didn't care because he was an incredible football player.
Well, granted, you know, I personally am somebody who is always delighted in pushing the envelope. Things that are not necessarily in great taste, I generally find amusing. Some things that people find cringe, I find funny. But that being said, I do think there's also something else that's coming out of this, which is sort of a, you know, in the sports world, the jock world, guys, you know, the locker room talk and everything. I think we've been told for years now that, well, you can't joke about that, and really you should try to be a better person. This isn't, that's not funny. You can't, don't punch down. You can't do this. You can't do that. Check your privilege, bro. All this stuff that we've been told for years and years and years now, I think there's kind of like, there was a cathartic moment to it where it's like, oh, wow, really? Nothing is off limits? We're and they're clearly joking. Everybody know. Yet, newsflash, we all understand that Aaron Hernandez was a bad person and that was a tragic, that, like,
the whole situation, right.
We understand that these are jokes.
Right. And it's a roast.
Yes.
And it wasn't on cable television. It was on Netflix.
Right.
Now, you couldn't just stumble into this. You had to go look for it.
The one person who I can understand why she would have a problem with what was said. However, the joke killed. It was hilarious. It was the best line of the night.
Well, I also think there's something to, this is the way guys talk. This is the way guys talk in locker rooms. This is the way guys talk in the dugout. This is the way people break each other's balls mercilessly. I'm going in on your mama. We talk about, you had a borderline serial killer on your team for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
We're
borderline.
Joke about it. Like, we're going to make some cracks, and it's going to be in poor taste, but it's... they're jokes at the end of the day. And what you said, you know, it's on Netflix, Houston. You're not going to stumble into this. You don't have to watch.
Right.
You don't have to laugh.
I swear there's a section of society that they want to watch it only to bitch about it later.
Be aggrieved.
Yeah.
And it's like, if
you, not only do you not have to watch it, but also you can't say anything to me if I want to watch.
Right, but that's exactly what they said. Alone. Oh, if you enjoyed any of this, you're racist or homophobic. It's like, this is comedy. Like, this is the space where you can go, and I'm not going to say nothing's off limits, but like, this is where the thoughts in comedians' heads, they get to say them, and you can laugh or you cannot, and it's fine. But to say, oh, how dare they? Shut up. Shut up. It's a roast. The whole point.
There's been a lot of talk about free speech in the news and in society here lately. And, you know, I for one think it's comforting that you can't go, like, again, this is the way guys talk. We, you know, when you're in a locker room, which is generally, you know, is a diverse place.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, people joke about race. People joke about homosexuality. People joke about 9/11. It doesn't make it right.
Yeah.
It doesn't. It's not necessarily good.
That might have been.
But it also kind of is, because you joke about things and it takes away the power of certain things.
Right.
You know.
It gives it some levity. The 9/11.
We need levity.
The 9/11 one by Tom. I thought that was a brilliant setup. I'm like, where's he going with this? Poor Drew Bledsoe.
I actually didn't hear that one, so I don't know.
He talks about, you know, he was talking about things he remembered. He's like, and I remember back to September of 2011 when those two Jets slammed into Drew Bledsoe, because it was against the Jets in September that he got hurt.
Okay.
That was a good setup. That was a nice – I'm like, where's he going with this? This is weird. Oh, man. And then Drew Bledsoe was a champ. He got bagged on all night.
I softly chuckled at that one and felt really bad about it.
I felt bad for Drew Bledsoe, but it was kind of funny.
Was Drew Bledsoe there?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He was up on stage. Did he roast? I don't think he did.
They busted him.
Yeah, they did. They busted Randy Moss. Did you watch much of it, or did you just see clips?
No,
that was
just
the only
clips.
Other thing was I felt like whoever they had writing, helping.
Randog?
They didn't do him any favors.
They didn't
write him very good.
Oh, Randy Moss didn't have good material?
No.
I didn't think Ben Affleck's was very good.
Yeah.
It was just, he just defended Tom the whole time, which was weird. I think Kevin Hart's funny. I thought he was good. It wasn't so much of a roast. He's just a funny
host. So what you're
host.
Telling me is the professional comedians were funnier than the jocks.
I thought Gronk, because he
Gronk's
was so
funny.
Dumb, he was actually really funny.
Yeah.
And Glazer just burned him down to the ground for being stupid.
Yeah, a lot of people did.
Me, Gronk.
What is it he said? I'm surprised you didn't start your roast with, "Hey, you guys." Sloth. Right? Sloth?
Yeah.
From Goonies? Yeah. No, there were definitely some really funny parts. And some of the stuff you laughed at, you're like, I don't know if I should be laughing at this, but it's kind of funny.
Edelnut's pretty good.
It was out there at times.
The reaction to something that I didn't even know was going to be a thing before the weekend.
Did you hear about it at
no,
all?
No, I had not no heard, promotion.
Had not heard a word about it.
And I'm still trying to adjust to watching things live on Netflix. Yeah. Which apparently is going to be more of a thing.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to get in the sports game very soon.
Oh, they already are. So, Peyton, apparently he did something at the beginning of it, but he didn't want any part of being.
He got out of there before the live bullet started flying.
Well, he was the last one up before Brady, and he just walks off the stage, and one of the first things Brady says is like, "Where the hell does Peyton go? Just walk off stage after he roasts me."
And then he
roasted Peyton for about 5 minutes.
My big ass forehead out here. I mean, can you imagine the incoming shots if Peyton had stood up there? Oh, would have been brutal.
He was on one, wasn't he? He was one of the roasters.
Who?
Peyton. I'm pretty sure Peyton's done.
Oh, a different one? Yeah, I think he has.
So.
We circled back to that here in a little bit. We do have Tennessee baseball tonight against Queens College from Charlotte, I guess. Hopefully you'd think we'd take them behind the woodshed, bend them across the barrel, and show them the 50 states. But I guess coming out of the Lipscomb debacle last week, you can't take these things for granted. Marcus Phillips gets the ball to start things off today. We'll see what kind of lineup Tony puts out there, and hopefully we will be visiting with him when he's in a happy mood tomorrow, getting ready for Vanderbilt, who, as we have stated before, he does not like.
Not a big fan. Did you happen to catch Kirby Cannell this morning on the morning show?
I did not.
John just flat out asked him, "Hey, man, what happened last week against Lipscomb?" Kirby was just, "I really don't know." I was like, okay, well, snap and clear.
That's the one thing I like about Kirby. He's honest.
Oh, yeah, he's not going to fool around with it.
That was going to be the one thing I like about John Reese. He'll just come right out and ask the question.
Well, I mean,
what were you guys doing?
You know, I guess the Bull Durham answer is, well, you know, we just take our hats off to those guys. You know, they made some plays out there. We weren't real focused, all that stuff. I don't know.
We got to play better team baseball.
I don't know what happened. I don't know what happened. We sucked, obviously. So I kind of like that answer from Kirby. The Titans sign Tyler Boyd to a one-year deal, I think $4 million.
How old is he now?
I think he's like 30, 31.
Yeah, got to be early 30s at the oldest.
Well, we got a veteran group of receivers, don't we?
Yeah. Guys that have been proven elsewhere.
And then I'm also seeing some chatter that they might bring in Zay Jones from the Jags on a visit as well. So he's 30, 31. You know, I saw his numbers took a precipitous decline last year, but –
has he lost a step?
I mean, has Calvin Ridley lost a step? The Jags were terrible last year. He might have lost a step. He's not a spring chicken anymore. But
I have a good feeling about Ridley. I think this is going to be the bounce back year. It's hard
I have
to
a good feeling about Boyd. Like, I do too.
I was talking to John earlier. Like, you look at the complement of receivers. Now they may not have that true number one, you know, top five guy, but 1 through 4. Like, especially if Burks can stay healthy, it's like, this is pretty good.
Guys and
this is pretty good.
Guys that haven't ever in their careers, you know, been deep. And not, I mean, Hopkins,
yeah.
I guess.
Hopkins was
a little bit of a diva, but, I mean, he was one of the best wide receivers in the game. So
feels like Ridley is just glad he's, you know, back in the league after his suspension and everything. Yeah. I think he's.
Who's our home run hitter, though, out of the four?
It's got to be Ridley.
It's got to be Ridley. I think there's potential for Burks, but he has to stay healthy. Has to. And if we get Zay Jones, you wonder if Burks is even going to be there.
Yeah. Well, he's already number four if they're bringing Boyd in.
Yeah, I agree.
I would think.
Yeah.
But I think there's room for Burks to make an impact because here's the thing, man. It's the NFL. Not guys are going to miss games.
Yes,
usually it's
yes.
Burks been missing the games. But
right.
If he is fourth or fifth entering the season, at some point somebody is going to be out with injury for a couple of weeks, and he will have an opportunity to step in and play.
You think this is it? Is this his last year?
I mean, it's his contract year, yeah.
Yeah, with the Titans, 100%. And he's done nothing, so he needs to do something.
He's one of those guys that is constantly injured.
He's the latest in a long line of guys like that that the Titans have had. But we can ask Ryan Shumpert, who is also a Titans fan, about that when we continue next right here on The Drive. We'll get into some Tennessee baseball talk with him, get his thoughts on Rick Barnes trying to establish a roster. Will he actually fill all 13 spots? It's beginning to feel like maybe you keep one of those in your back pocket, at least over the summer, and see what's available closer to the season or maybe even during the season. And the aforementioned SEC football post-spring power rankings are coming out. CBS had some, and I wonder if Tennessee is getting a little bit overlooked in all of this headed into the season. We'll talk with Ryan Shumpert of Rocky Top Insider when we continue next on The Drive. It's Fan Run Radio. Stay with us. Welcome back. The Drive continues. Fan Run Radio. I'm Russell Smith alongside Houston Crest Bear and young Tucker Harlan, who had his last class today.
Felt nice.
Educated.
It's a great feeling.
Edumacated.
Very, very nice.
It's real nice, Clark. Do you feel smarter right now? Do you feel?
Oh, no. Absolutely not smarter.
And now, welcome to the real world. Something like that. That's what they always told me. And then you're in the real world.
So when you're figuring out that all that stuff they said you'd need, you find out you really don't need it.
Yeah, I can think of about 5 subjects off the top of my head that are just completely useless now.
Well, let's bring in a fellow educated member of the local sports media, Ryan Shumpert of RockyTopInsider.com. Ryan, you got your education, didn't you?
I did get my education. Big congrats to Tucker. Great feeling being done. So congrats to a fellow Brentwood High School alum and
hey.
A fellow UT alum.
Thank you, Shumpert.
All right. Well done, sir. Ryan, appreciate you jumping in here this afternoon. We got Tennessee baseball tonight. And we had talked some Tennessee baseball with Ryan Shumpert. He covers all these games. And Tennessee has climbed the ladder again. They were picked to finish kind of, mid-upper tier. They thought we'd have a good team, but other teams were picked ahead of them, and here we are with 2 weeks left to go of the season, and the Vols are at the top of the mountain, number one. What do you think about the curse of the whole one seed thing, the number one overall seed? Is that a challenge, or should Tennessee fans just embrace it, and this is where you want to be?
Yeah, I don't know if you really care too much about being the number one team or the number one overall seed. I think it's definitely an achievement to be back at the number one spot, though. Again, I don't think it necessarily means a ton. So I kind of fall somewhere in the middle. I don't think you should be avoiding it like the plague or anything, but it's certainly in a sport like college baseball, I don't think it's necessarily a huge difference between being the number two overall seed, the number three overall seed, or the number one overall seed. So I'll probably look, more at what the potential super regional matchup would be, what a potential first game in Omaha matchup would be. I think that's the stuff that would matter more. So certainly teams that have been the number one overall seed have not fared well, especially some of the best number one overall seeds. Vanderbilt team back in 2013, UCLA had a great team, and obviously everyone's all too familiar with the Tennessee team a few years ago who got bounced in the Supers. But to me, that feels more superstitious more than anything. But to me, it's more about who you could potentially match up with in a Super Regional or down the line even in Omaha.
Yeah, I mean, just like college basketball, right? It's about matchups once you get to the tournament. And, from Tennessee's perspective, all you can do is control yourself. And I look at what the Vols are doing right now, and obviously they're doing a lot right. Vitello has put together another great roster. He's handling it well. You're number one for a reason, right? I do look at it, though, Ryan, and my opinion is I don't think this team is as good as the 2022 team. I'm not sure that they're as good as last year's team. They've won games, we're just trying to project all the way down to the finish. What's your take on it, Ryan? Is this team good enough to make a deep run and get back to Omaha and do something there once they get there?
Yeah, I think they definitely are. To me, the conversation has changed from whether this team's good enough to get back to Omaha to what can they do if they make it back to Omaha. We knew that the lineup was so good, and probably not as good as 22, but to me it's better than any other offense Tennessee's had under Tony Vitello, and they've just slowly pieced more things together on the mound to where I think you have to feel pretty good about where they are as a pitching staff. They're not perfect. They're not going to be as good as they were last year. They're not going to be as good as they were in 22, but they continue to find more and more answers there, and I think when you entered this season, you said, all right, this offense is going to be a lot better. The pitching staff has a lot more questions, and you always said kind of the caveat to that was you trusted Frank Anderson. You trusted that he would figure some things out, and I think now with 2 weeks left in the regular season, you say, yeah, that was smart to trust him because pitching staff is short as probably 6 weeks ago. You're like, man, I'm not sure if they're going to be able to have enough here to make it back to Omaha. To me, that's not the question anymore. It's what can they do when they get – or if they get to Omaha. We know they can get to Omaha.
But you tell me if I'm being Chicken Little here. I kind of feel like it here, Ryan. But, I mean, does Tennessee have the pitching depth? Again, comparing to last year, I don't think they had the pitching depth they had last year. You know that what Beam can do. We've got piggyback situations, it feels like, the other two starters. Does Tennessee have – the depth on that pitching staff to make a decent run?
I think so. I think that, to me, the question is less about the depth because I think you look at it now, it's almost weird. To me, it almost feels like Tennessee's two best starters are guys that aren't starting for them, and A.J. Causey and Nate Snead. It almost feels like those are Tennessee's two best pitchers right now, and Drew Beam's certainly really consistent. But Aaron Combs' emergence, to me, is a huge one. He was a guy that they were – banking on being one of their best arms entering the season, and he's become that guy here in the last month, 5 weeks of the season where he's been really dominant. And then you talk about the piggyback situations with Xander Seacrest, who's been solid, and Stamos, who's not a high-end arm but can give them a couple outs or a couple innings every weekend. And then Kirby, who's Mr. Reliable. To me, it feels like they have enough outs that they can get. The depth is fine. The depth can get them to Omaha. To me, the question almost becomes more, do they have the high-end arm? Do they have an arm that they really trust enough that you feel like can take over a game? And if you run into somebody in the College World Series like they have, both times they've gotten there, both times under Tony Vitello, they had to face Andrew Abbott for Virginia in the first game, who's already in the MLB, and then Paul Skenes, who obviously everybody knows was fantastic last year. It doesn't feel like Tennessee has a pitcher that can go toe-to-toe with one of those guys. To me, that almost feels like the bigger question mark to me, whether as opposed to depth. I think they have enough depth that when you combine it, unless the offense just goes completely quiet, which I don't expect them to, they can make it to Omaha.
Do you think they've locked up certainly have locked up a regional. Do you think they've locked up a super regional, or do you need to win these next two series? Do you have to do anything in Hoover to make sure of that?
I think it's more barring a collapse. I think if they go 3-3 these next 2 weeks and split these two series, and you know, if they do that, they'll be a top four seed, so they'll be guaranteed two games in the SEC tournament in Hoover, and then you win a game in the SEC tournament, then yeah, I think they will be a national seed and a top eight seed. So they probably haven't quite locked it up yet, but I don't think they necessarily have to continue to build and push. I think it's kind of maintain. They can just maintain where they're at these next 2 weeks and then into the SEC tournament. Then, yes, I think they'll be a national seed, and they'll be able to host a super regional if they can make it out of their own regional.
Do you think Tony cares at all about Hoover? You know, we had this conversation in basketball now where the Tennessee fans, particularly after winning the SEC tournament and not being rewarded for it 3 years ago, have gotten to the point where they don't really care about the SEC tournament. It feels that way in baseball. Some managers put more into it than others, it seems. What do you think Vitello's attitude towards the SEC tournament is?
Yeah, I think Tony Vitello actually really likes the SEC tournament. I mean, he talks about it a lot, how it's such a well-run event and how it's one of the coolest events of the entire year, and he loves the players getting to experience it. And I've been told by somebody that it's run better than the NCAA tournament. It's one of the Tennessee's program's favorite events of the season. So, yes, I do think he cares about it a lot, and he likes it, and he wants to win it. But he's not going to do anything to jeopardize Tennessee's hopes in the NCAA tournament to win it. So he's not going to push any pitchers too far, and he's going to keep kind of the main thing, the main thing. He knows that while everybody at Tennessee loves the SEC tournament, they all have bigger aspirations and bigger goals, and they know the NCAA tournament's more important. So I don't think it's the end-all, be-all, but compared to how, you know, some teams maybe view it, and certainly it's been being going one and done in the SEC tournament with a really talented teams almost put a very good formula to make it to Omaha. I don't think it's necessarily going to be one of those things where Tennessee just doesn't care and Tennessee will be happy to go lose real quick and go back home. I think it is an event. Once they get there, they want to win, and they respect a lot.
Ryan Shumpert, RockyTopInsider.com, with us here this afternoon on the program. Ryan, switching gears to basketball. You know, Tennessee, 10 roster spots spoken for, obviously holding out hope that Chaz Lanier will become player number 11. Then you got two spots to play with. Do you think that it's possible Rick Barnes could decide to hold one or even both of those extra spots in his back pocket towards later in the fall or maybe even into the season?
I'm starting to feel that way because it doesn't feel like, other than, you know, picking up a portal guard, which again, Chaz Lanier remains to be the only name out there, and everything Tennessee has is in that boat at this point. Besides that, it doesn't feel like Tennessee is going to add anybody else that's really going to have a major role on next season's team. And so there's been a handful of prep names that have come up and have been mentioned, but there just hasn't necessarily been a ton of traction with any, and it doesn't feel like it's ever gotten past that initial conversation stage. So with all that in mind and the fact that there would be still two more scholarships to fill out, it feels like that almost is the most logical thing or maybe the most likely thing at this point, that at least one of those scholarships isn't filled going into the season. I would be surprised if both of them were, and I still feel like Tennessee, whether it be it's something here in the next month or so or in July in the AAU period, maybe they get somebody that they can convince to reclassify that's old for their age. That's kind of been a pretty common thing for Tennessee's program. So I'd be surprised if they take two spots. They just have 11 guys on scholarship entering the season. But at this point, I don't think it would be a surprise at all if it's only 12 guys and they have one scholarship remaining entering the season.
Ryan, let's just assume for the sake of discussion that Tennessee gets Chaz Lanier and then they fill at least one of those spots with a developmental player or a guy that they're at least not counting on to make a huge impact next season. Do you think in that situation – how does that roster with the returnees and Dubar, Milicic Jr., Okpara, and Lanier, how does that roster compare to this past season?
I think that's the tough question about it, is from the standpoint of Tennessee's roster was really good last season, and it was really good, period, but it was also really good because Dalton Knecht was the best or second-best player in the country, and as good as I think Chaz Lanier is, I don't think anyone can expect that out of him. So I think there's potential for Tennessee, especially on the offensive side of the ball, to be more well-balanced and to have a better offensive roster, even though they don't have one player that's as good as Dalton Knecht. So I think overall it's probably comparable. You're probably not going to be quite as deep defensively, but if you have Zakai Ziegler and Jemai Meshack and you pair that with Felix Okpara, who is one of five players in college basketball that blocked 80 shots last season, I think you still feel good there. So I say all that to say, in kind of a roundabout way, I think it's pretty comparable. You just might not have that extra punch that Dalton Knecht gave Tennessee last year, and just the comfort level that he gave Tennessee in big games and in also kind of close games in the final 8 minutes.
Let's go around the room here real quick. Roster next year with Lanier, better or worse than this past season? You can't say the same. You must decide.
Feels like top to bottom, it might be better. It might be more balanced.
Mm-hmm. But you're not. You don't have a Knecht.
It's just tough to say it'll be better without a guy who can drop 40 on just about any night. But I think you might get better team basketball. I think that's possible.
Yeah, I mean, the same thing. The biggest difference is that, like Ryan was saying, that extra gear, and it's about the last 8 minutes. What he could do in the last 8 minutes.
Yeah. All across the board, it's definitely better if you land Chaz Lanier, just because – you had some guys last year that you thought you were going to get a lot out of and didn't.
Two, perhaps, seniors, maybe, that you're talking about? Yeah.
Right. Barnes has not had a lot of success in the transfer portal. Most of the time, these guys make a middling impact but he hits on connect, and now all of a sudden Tennessee fans were I don't know what they're expecting largely out of Milicic, but I think Dubar and Lanier and Arpara, they're expecting those guys to come in and be productive right away.
You're right. It is kind of a funny dichotomy because it's gone just completely in the opposite end of the spectrum, and I think for good reason. It goes both ways from the fan base aspect of it, of expecting more, but it also goes for Tennessee's ability to sell what they've done in the portal and maybe land some better guys. And just the way that I think Rick Barnes has probably embraced it too, because now Tennessee loses two guys in the portal this year in addition to all the guys that they lose to graduation / the NBA draft. And it's like, all right, well, you got to be aggressive in the portal. And I think you've seen, not that Tennessee hasn't, in the past it's felt like Tennessee has targeted players that can shoot while playing good defense in the portal. This cycle, besides Okpara, it feels like they've gone all in on guys that are really good offense players. And that is clear priority one. They don't really care too much. I'm sure they care some, but it's not a priority how good of a defensive player they were at their last stop. And I think that is another example of Dalton Connect changing Tennessee's outlook of it too, and kind of how it's changed seemingly everybody's outlook involving Tennessee in the transfer portal.
Ryan Shumpert, RTI, with us this afternoon. Ryan, before we let you run here, got to ask you a football question. I saw where CBS Sports listed, they did post-spring SEC football power rankings. No surprise, Georgia is number one. Houston, where do you think the Vols fell? SEC power rankings out of 16 teams now.
I think I may have cheated and heard this on the morning show.
Okay.
Was it fifth?
No.
No, it was seventh.
No.
Can't be worse.
Go in between.
Now I got a math.
Tennessee, a sixth, Ryan, behind Missouri at number five, Alabama, Ole Miss at three, Texas at two. Are the Vols being overlooked potentially heading into the dawning of the Nico Iamaleava era?
I don't think so, potentially. I mean, to me, I think I would definitely have Georgia 1, I'd definitely have Texas 2, and to me, that next group of whatever that would be, I guess, four teams, see if the college graduate can do math. No, that's three teams. Yeah, four teams. Alabama, Ole Miss, Missouri, and Tennessee. To me, all four of those teams feel similar, and so I guess you could say they're being a little overlooked because they're at the bottom of that group, but I don't necessarily take exception to that. But I do think Tennessee's probably closer to a four than they are, you know, eight, a couple spots behind them.
How much do you think Josh Heupel hates not having Eli Drinkwitz a chance for revenge in Neyland Stadium? How much do you think he dislikes this schedule, not getting that rematch opportunity after Eli stood on business?
I think he probably would like the rematch opportunity, but I do think Missouri has a good team. And, man, you look at Tennessee's schedule, and I wrote about that story yesterday. Tennessee's eight teams that they play in there. You got Georgia, who's number one, and I guess Alabama was maybe number four on there. Everybody else is below Tennessee, and it includes 14, 15, and 16, which in some order was Mississippi State, Arkansas, and Vanderbilt. So you talk about an expanded SEC with 16 teams and an eight-game schedule. I don't think Tennessee could have asked for a much easier one.
That's a good point. You get the three weakest teams according to this metric, and we know what these are worth. It's fun to discuss, but certainly Vanderbilt, Arkansas, Mississippi State sound like they will struggle. And I mean the competitive guy in him, I'm sure, wants to show Drinkwitz what's up. But
only one of those three on the road, correct? We go to Arkansas.
Yeah, we go to Fayetteville.
Yes, to Arkansas and to Vanderbilt, I think, next year's games at Vanderbilt.
Yeah, but that's a home game, Ryan, so I don't count that one.
It is. Yeah, well, fair enough.
All right, Ryan, as we let you run here this afternoon, any sage advice as a young guy who's had some early success in the sports media landscape for young Tucker Harlan as he prepares to leave the cold comforts of academia for the harsh realities of the American workplace?
I don't know about any advice, maybe some words of comfort that it's way better than school. I mean, just not having to deal with the school while doing the stuff is very nice. I mean, I miss my friends that were here in college. I miss them. I don't miss any of the school aspect of it. My sage advice is always to college students is not to care about their classes if they're trying to do sports media. That was what most helped me.
Don't care about your classes. Okay.
I think Tucker put his, you know, priorities pretty well in that case.
Care to some extent, not care too much, though.
Don't obviously. Kill yourself for class.
Exactly.
Do whatever you have to do to not fail, and if you have scholarships, to keep your scholarships. Yeah. And then after that, do not care.
Hey, Shum, I have a question for you, too, actually, before you go. I noticed that the Cubs had a particular first pitcher last night that the Vols played in the Elite Eight, that being Zach Edey. Do you think that had an effect on the outcome of last night's game for the Cubbies?
Yeah, no, 100%. I'm a huge believer in who you have throwing out the first pitch. 100% matters. The Cubs had Young Gravy throw out the first pitch of the game last year, and I was disgusted about it. I said, you're not going to win when Young Gravy – you're in a playoff push, and you got Young Gravy throwing out the first pitch.
Who the hell
Luckily,
is Young
this
Gravy?
Is earlier in the season. White rapper, very bad. That's all you need to know. Zach Edey, I was just as disgusted. It was even with the Young Gravy. There's no connection between the Cubs and Zach Edey. And you have it, and obviously I'm down here in Tennessee, so maybe I can't really stand for the – you have all these Cubs fans in the Midwest who had to watch Zach Edey play for 4 years, and I'm sure feel even more extreme versions of how Tennessee fans feel about having to watch Zach Edey play because they had to play against him 8 times in 4 years. And all these people now who are Cubs fans had to deal with the same thing. So pretty disgusted with it. It put a very sour taste in my mouth on the night that Justin Steele came back from injury. And I do, to answer Tucker's question, I 100% believe that's why the Cubs lost last night.
Hey, we're taking a fan-run field trip down to the ATL to see the Cubs play the Braves. And I guess two struggling teams all of a sudden. I think the Braves probably struggling more than the Cubs, quite honestly, after getting swept by the Dodgers. So that'll be an interesting series the beginning of next week.
Yeah, I'm going down there for the Wednesday game, I think. So if that's the game y'all are going to, we'll have to meet up.
We're going Monday.
Okay. But y'all will get the series opener. I'll be there for the series finale.
All right, sounds good.
Attaboy.
Ryan, appreciate your time, my friend. Thank you.
Yeah, as always, enjoyed it, fellas.
Ryan Shumpert of RockyTopInsider.com making his presence felt this afternoon on The Drive. Be sure to give him a follow at RShump00. There's a C in there, Chris.
Found it. Yep. That was good. Good info.
Rion Shumpert.
Stay with us.
Ryan S. Shumpert.
The Drive continues. Lot to unpack there. We will get back and open up the phone lines as well as we get down to it. Got a good smoking hot question for you this afternoon as well. And once again, for the second day in a row, there's actually a racing tie-in. So we'll have some fun with that for you gearheads. You never talk enough NASCAR. You never talk open wheel. Russ, why don't you talk auto racing? This is it. This week, two shows. Gearheads delight. Live it up. Love it. Enjoy it, because it's probably never happening again after today. Stay with us. The Drive rages on right here on Fan Run Radio. Fan Run Radio. The Drive continues. 105.7 FM, 1340 AM. Streaming online, fanrunradio.com. Your free Fan Run app. A variety of ways for you to experience the program. We got a podcast available wherever you listen to podcasts. Help us spread the word. Tell a friend. Let them know where we're at, how they can listen, so that we can continue to grow.
But seriously, please do that. If you enjoy the programming, tell a friend.
You don't think I was being serious?
No, I think you were. I'm driving emphasis into it. Like, hey, we're serious. We don't just say these things. Tell a friend.
Yeah.
You don't think people take Russ seriously?
Not that they don't, but they hear it and they're like, oh, yeah.
He's been hanging out with me for almost 10
years. And so then
they're
like, oh, then we're going to talk about something. They're going to forget. But now I'm really driving it home. Tell
You hitched
a
your
friend.
Wagon to me, my friend.
As a matter of fact, I would go as far as say, tell a friend or don't bother listening anymore.
Whoa.
Too far?
It's a little extreme.
I don't know. If the same amount of people tell a friend as stop listening, we're right back at even.
Yeah.
It's a wash.
So, yeah.
Ryan Shumpert, Rocky Top Insider. Bear, what did you learn?
You can sit in what I've been doing, how we're going to handle our rotation. The end of the baseball season's most interesting part of it, as far as seeding and where we're at and, you know, trying to get that hosting the regional and the super regional. It's interesting to me. Like, I wonder what goes into when Vitello and staff sit down and figure out how they're going to manage the pitchers through the SEC tournament. I know you want to win, but I feel like, you know, you've got to keep everybody on their normal rest so that when you go to play in the regional the following weekend, so you can manage your arms for the next month.
Yeah, I keep going back to that conversation we had with Drew Beam 2 weeks ago. Where
arm care?
He admitted, like, his first year, he got – what did he say?
He got tired.
Did he say burned out?
I think he said burned out.
Arm fatigue or something towards the end of the season. And
he didn't have his best stuff.
Yeah, you got to manage it. You absolutely have to manage it.
Because that's the one thing I will say about LSU last year. You know, they had the best pitcher in college baseball, but their staff had their best stuff at the end of the year.
They had freaking Skeens.
Well, they had Skeens, but those other guys, I mean, it wasn't just Skeens.
No, that one guy that we faced, was that had to be in Omaha. The bigger guy, he tore us up. We could not hit that guy. I kept waiting for the dam to break, and it just never did. I did think it was interesting. Shump said that Tony Vitello really values the SEC tournament. Like, here we are saying, like, oh, yeah, if you win it, great. If you don't worry about it. Just save the arms. Shump made it sound like Vitello has, which we've heard him say that. He's mentioned, like, oh, Hoover is such a great event. It's such a great experience.
But, right. But now I am really interested in watching how Phillips pitches tonight.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see him have a good. Is he going to get more than one inning, or are we going to do the three outs and switch it up again, try to get more people some minutes?
You got to need to be finding another arm. Yeah. I'd like to see that. I'd like to see him if he could.
I don't think he goes more than two.
You don't think they give him three innings?
I think he gets one or two, and then try and get as many people. Because I don't think we're planning on Phillips going a long distance for us at any point. He's a guy in my mind that hopefully we bring in and he gives us an inning. You know, he comes in and can throw 20 pitches and give you a decent inning here or there in the postseason.
I'd agree with that. If he can give you more in a spot, great, but you got to have some of those guys come in. Like, especially, like, bridge a gap. Like, if a guy has to go out early and it's just too many innings left to bring in a certain pitcher that you might want, just get a guy that can get you through an inning or two.
Yeah, I just want to make sure he's gotten in enough work.
Yeah. No, I'm with you.
And can go.
Well, it's
– I mean, wouldn't you rather find out tonight rather than 3 weeks from now?
Yes.
And you're really trying to count on him?
Yeah, but, I mean, how much are we going to find out from Queens College?
That's what we said about Lipscomb.
It's not so much about Queens College. It's watching him pitch.
Yeah. I mean, I would think the biggest boost for his confidence, I know it was only one batter, but coming in at the end of that Kentucky game and would have gotten a little bit touch and go and getting the out there. I mean, he's not the only guy. Like, I want to see some of the other guys, some of the other pitchers.
Who are some of the other guys you want to see? I don't know their names.
You know, Matthew Dallas, Dylan Loy, a couple of freshmen. You know, is Banky going to be reliable once we get in? Like, we put him in a big spot a couple of weeks ago, and he didn't do too well. Combs feels like he's coming on. Whatever happened to Derek Schaefer?
No idea.
He got a start early in the season. He was like the guy they were most excited about, well, I want to say. We have not heard or seen him in weeks.
Well, I don't know if he was one. I think it was just Matthew Dallas and Dylan Loy in that one game against Bowling Green where they literally could not find the strike zone. Like, there was a couple of guys that they trotted out there that threw eight balls straight, and they just yanked them.
Yeah, and, you know, we go through this list, and let's be honest about it. The guy that is the biggest guy that we all want to see that might actually make or break the season is A.J. Russell.
Yes.
And I don't think we see him tonight, but I would like to see him before the postseason. So
Sounds like South Carolina
in a relief situation is a possibility.
Man, if he could be a guy that we could count on to get, you know, three outs when we really need it, just get us out of an inning. That would be fantastic.
Yeah, I wonder if they put him in there and say, like, look, dude, you're throwing 20 pitches, and really, we know it's probably going to be good. We really just want to see how you react the next day.
Yeah.
And if you see do that, swells, then, yeah, we can trust you for an inning going forward.
Derek Schaefer is currently listed as having the highest ERA on the team at 9.72.
That may be why we're not seeing very much.
He is 2-0 in his two starts. He's appeared in 9 games.
Yeah, but when was the last time we saw him? Like, you would think tonight would be the perfect time to give him an inning.
Like, even midweek games, we just haven't seen him.
I mean, there could be – he might have –
dealing with something.
Yeah, you don't know.
I'm curious.
He got a third of an inning against Bellarmine on the 16th.
I'm really curious.
Of April, of course.
To know how
– Of April?
Mm-hmm.
It was last month.
That's still a minute.
Working on the calendar here.
What do you think the highest ERA we've rolled out, like on the reg, like in the rotation, the past 4 years of baseball here?
I don't know. There was a stretch last year where it felt like Dolander had like 5-something, but it was those weird front-loaded games where he'd go out and have a bad inning and then he'd settle in, but then he had a couple where he'd get cooked into the second and third inning and boost it and he'd have to come out. But before that, I guess 2 years ago we had the lowest starting ERA average in the country. Yeah. Like, I don't think any of those guys were over 2.5.
Yeah, I just wonder we've got this weird kind of boomerang thing going now where you had the pitching heavy team last year that might have been a little short on hitting, to the opposite this year, to feels like it might swing back the other way if Russell and Snead come back healthy. You know they're going to bring in another guy from the transfer portal. It feels like they could end up actually swinging back the other side of the pendulum next year.
Yeah, because we're going to be losing some of our bigger bats.
You lose the first 5 guys in your batting order.
Oh.
Yeah.
And so, we felt the same way when Beck and Gilbert and all those guys. Who else? I mean, we've had so many.
Lipscomb.
Yeah. He hit just some massive.
Even Cortland Lawson. He was an important, very underrated piece on that 22 team.
I feel like we talked about it at the merit throw against – was that – yeah, it was against Vanderbilt. Remember when I had forgotten all about it. I saw it on social media. Somebody posted a clip of that play. The Vandy guy hit it out to the wall, and he caught it coming off the wall, and then – just gunned him from the wall in right field.
Coming up, setting up a big hour number 2 of the show, we will get to your phone calls and a potentially explosive, smoking hot question of the day. You know, another cheating scandal in racing here right before the Indy 500. Roger Penske having to suspend some guys. All kinds of stuff happening in that world. Biggest cheaters in sports history. We've been talking a lot about baseball. These guys getting caught, the Schlossnagel allegations, the Georgia pitcher getting set to go back to Vandy, where, of course, they had a pitcher get caught this year. We had the bat incident the last time we were over there. Biggest cheaters in sports history. We discuss with you coming up next. On many of these fan-run affiliates, stay with us. The drive continues right after this.